And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hey, gang, let's play it smart out there tonight. I want to see a lot of work from you guys. Put your heads on the ice out there. Guys, we all know how to play hockey. Just play it smart.
That's right.
Get out there and stick them. Fuck them, Christ, pop them.
Right here, Sher, let's go.
Come on.
Come on.
Let's go now. We need this win, you know. We got a lot of losses to
Yeah, we got a lot of losses. Let's start making up for it. Let's start winning.
Let's go to the top.
That's what we're here for, guys, to win. Play heads up out there. I mean, let's be smart. Man for man, we're better than any fucking club in the league. And we just put our minds to
win.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens. We're all the sports talkers, royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today's Wednesday, October 15th. This is episode 199. I'm Gino, here with Kevin, here with Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and give us a look. Join our pages. We want more people joining our pages. Join our pages. Tonight, we're going all over the world of sports. We'll talk some NFL, some college football. We'll get into a little NHL season just started. And we're going to first start it off with a little update on where we are with the baseball playoffs. We'll start with AL. So in the AL, game three taking place as we speak. Seattle has won the first two. Game one, Bryce Miller was excellent. Six innings, two hits, three walks, one run. Raleigh hit a game, hit a tying home run in that game. And the second game, it was tied 3-3 after two. Seattle, three in the fifth, one in the sixth, three in the seventh. Polanco and Julio Rodriguez, by the way, hit three-run home runs. Seattle won that game 10-3. Any comments on the AL? Right now, by the way, game three, Toronto's up 6-2 in the fourth. Any comments on AL so far, guys?
Well, you know, the first two games have been Jorge Polanco, really the key guy there. You know, he had the two RBIs in game one, three more RBIs in game two. That's five. The two games, and they were big hits. I mean, obviously, game one, 3-1 game. Manny Brun's big, but game two, he's the one that gave him the lead, and then they tapped nine. Polanco's been the guy really key in that team right now. And I was shocked at how easily, relatively, they won, I thought, the first two games.
Yeah, keeping Vlad in check seems to be the key to the entire way to play with against Toronto. And what the Yankees couldn't do, the Mariners found a way to do, you know, so far in the first two games in Toronto anyway. And, you know, Miller, who gave up that run in the top of the first with the leadoff homer to Springer, and you're like, oh, God, what's Miller going to go? They're going to pull him in 1 2/3. And all of a sudden, he just kept grinding and grinding and grinding. And in a matchup you didn't think he was the favorite in, he ended up outlasting. And then they got the Yankees couldn't get to in game two.
You're savage.
And then, tonight they jump out 2-0. You're like, oh, no. We're looking at a sweep, and then Toronto was showing some life. And listen, unfortunately for both of these teams, if you don't live in Seattle or Toronto, or you're not a purist of a baseball fan, you're not going to set your life around it. It's exciting to watch both of these fan bases get the root for something. You know, listen, the last time Blue Jays won was the Joe Carter, you know, magical home run, which we all remember off Mitch Williams. It was great. And
touch of ball, Joe Carter, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And last time Seattle won, it was never. So it's exciting for both fan bases right now. Like you said, Kev, Polanco, you know, you bat him clean up. You're like, okay, well, Raleigh's two and J-Rod's three, and they have to put somebody fourth, so why not Polanco? But he's been everything that you would hope at a four-hitter. Cal Raleigh's been good. You know, it's J-Rod hit homers in back-to-back games. So Seattle's got things going. Tonight, Springer just hit one out. Listen, I think we have a long series here.
Yeah, and Polanco's, I mean, since the beginning of August, his OPS is over 1,000. So it's not like this is a two-week type thing here. This has been going on for 2.5 months that he's been swinging the bat real well.
Yeah.
He's a solid player. And it's going to be how the pitching holds up for these teams. And the pen is a decisive advantage to Seattle if it gets into that, in my opinion.
Okay.
We'll see what happens there.
And then we move over to the National League. Dodgers are up 2-0. Game one, they beat Milwaukee 2-1. Blake Snell was fantastic. Eight innings, one hit, zero walks, 10 Ks. Threw 103 pitches in eight innings. Faced the minimum 24 batters in eight innings. First pitcher to do that since, Kev, in the playoffs since.
Game.
That's right. 1956 World Series, Don Larson. Game two, Dodgers win 5-1. Another great pitched game. Yamamoto was fantastic. Gave up a leadoff home run to Churio and then was just unhittable. 9 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks, 111 pitches. I know you guys love it's a complete game in the playoffs. You guys must have been going nuts.
I love nothing about the Dodgers, but that was nice to see.
Actually, both games.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Kev. Yeah.
We know about the Dodger bats, but if they get 17 innings from two starters and give up 4 hits, they're winning. There's no way around that.
Especially since I think the bullpen, we all think that the bullpen is the weak link in the Dodgers. So the less you can expose it, the better. And this is so much different than last year's playoff run where they relied on basically two starters and, you know, using 7 guys every game.
And Trinan was good. And Trinan was good last year. Trinan was
he was. Trinan was excellent last year.
He was the one guy you could really count on. I mean, the one guy you knew you could count on at the end. Now they don't have that guy.
Yeah.
But now you know you've got probably Glasnow I think is 3 and Ohtani's 4.
Yep. That's the schedule.
You know that's 2 more starters that Glasnow can be hit or miss, but if he's on he's good for 6. And Ohtani expect to throw 6. That's got to be a well rested bullpen.
Absolutely. And Kev, all of those guys have the ability to be dominant through 6. It's not 6. They could be dominant through 6 innings. Yep. The only one out of those you think probably doesn't do that is Ohtani, who may not go 6. He may only go 5, but still could be unhittable for 5. I mean, there's no way around it. Darren?
Well, yeah, the Brewer bats in the first series against Chicago at home were just lights out. Not necessarily in game 5. They were fine in game 5. But games 1 and 2, they were just hitting the cover off the ball. And right now, they're not doing anything. And listen, the one thing about the Brewers is one of those things where the sum of the team is better than the individual parts when you look at it. None of us picked the Brewers to win the Central. Not to insult the Brewers, but we thought that, hey, listen, they're a nice team, maybe 85 wins, and then they had the best record in baseball. But what we see on the other end is a team that basically just had enough talent just to coast their way through the regular season. Have Blake Snell and his 11 starts during the regular season, who makes more than the entire Brewer pitching, the pitching staff. He just comes out and he's looked great throughout the entire playoffs. And Yamamoto, you feel like he's a guy, if you don't get him early, you're not going to get him. And I think it's the same thing with Glasnow and Ohtani. I think they're all first. You got to get all these guys in the first 2 innings. Otherwise, you're not going to get them. And they're just supremely talented and confident. And, listen, I'm rooting for the Brewers to come back in this one. I'm hoping that they do what the Blue Jays did tonight and just get a little bit of a run. But it's hard to really like their chances talent for talent against the Dodgers. Jake?
All right, so let's spend 2 minutes and talk about the wacky double play that happened in game 1. I'll set the scene for you. So 4th inning, Dodgers had the bases loaded with 1 out. Muncy hit a ball to the wall in center. Frelick went up for the catch. The ball clanked out of his glove, hit the wall, then was caught on the way back down. Because the ball hit the wall on the catch, it's obviously in play, not an out. The left field umpire, Chad Fairchild, by the way, correctly signaled no catch all the way. But amid the confusion, 3 Dodger base runners all held up, which gave the Brewers enough time to get the force out at the plate. And then William Contreras had enough, the catcher from Milwaukee had enough sense to jog down to third base and touch third base and get the force out at third for a just unbelievable double play. Something I don't think I've ever seen before.
As amazing a highlight as I've ever seen, by the way. I mean, I'm not really a highlight. I was actually watching it at the time. But then I watched it again a couple of times on the replay as they kept showing it because I'm like, what just happened? Taken aback by it, G. It was that's the thing about baseball. All sports have anomalies to them sometimes. But baseball, I think, sometimes has a little bit more than the others. And, just because of differences of stadiums and parks and field and where things go it was very cool. Kev?
What gets me, though, is why didn't the Dodgers challenge this? Because when you look at, I'm just looking at it again, when, was it Frelick?
Yep.
He goes up, it hits off his glove, it hits the wall, looks like at the yellow line, which is your home run line.
You know, well, we've seen
it where players have, it's been in the field playing, the players put it over the wall, it's a home run. If it hits the yellow line out of his glove, why is that not a home run?
So I think it's because he's in play. It didn't just hit the wall, it hit him. So once it hits you, the ball's in play. If you catch it, you catch it. If you don't catch it, you don't catch it.
We saw the ball hit Canseco on the head and go over the fence. And
that's what I'm thinking of. Canseco off the head, off the fence, home run.
Yeah, but that's out of play. That's out of the stadium. There is no wall for it to hit.
But is the yellow line, does it have to be above the yellow line, or does it have to hit the yellow line? That's the rule I don't know.
So I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's because he actually touched the ball and now the ball's in play. And that's why it didn't matter where on the wall it hit. He already he forced the ball in play, basically. I mean, you know what I mean?
None of us have ever seen this before.
My only question is, I don't know if it hits the line, it's a homer. It has to be clear, completely clear of the line for it to homer. I don't know the answer to that.
We'll have to take a look.
I've never looked it up. And Kev, I didn't even pay attention to that when it was happening. So
it was somebody else that brought it up.
I did not notice that at all. I was just so enamored by what the hell happened. I wasn't even paying attention to the line. But you know what? You're right. And I'm not even watching it right now, but now I can kind of visualize it a little bit in my head. And you're right. I just didn't I didn't even think about it when it was happening.
Yep.
Any other baseball points? I got one other thing I want to just throw out there about the Yankees and Mets. So they announced the finalists for the Gold Glove Awards today. So there's three finalists at every position, and then they'll announce the actual winner down the road in, you know, whatever it is, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. Locally, Max Fried was one of them. David Peterson was another. And the third was Luis Torrance.
Ryan McMahon also, G.
Oh, Ryan McMahon, right. How is Torrance there with only 72 games played? He only started 72 games.
Because Yadier Molina retired. And they don't know who to give it to. I can't think of it.
Who wanted to play DH for like 100 games and play first base for like 60?
Yeah, I remember.
You're right. I'm trying to remember.
Was that Palmeiro?
Yes. Yes,
it was Raffy.
Right. And that's another wacky one, too. So,
yeah.
Well, the Gold Gloves becomes a popularity contest in half. Before we move on, just a quick question, because there was a lot of things that was going on in New York sports this week about potential trades for Skeens and Skubal. And by the way, if Detroit trades Skubal, their payroll in 27 right now is at $27 million. They can afford to pay Skubal. If you let this guy walk when you're a playoff team already and you just need to add some offense, it makes absolutely no sense to me. But so, you know, Kev, would you trade, you know, for Skeens? Would you trade the big dog? Would you trade your ace? Would you trade McLean? It would be McLean plus, you know that.
Yeah.
But would you trade McLean for Skeens or Skubal? I'm not going to put the whole fake trade together because it's all bull anyway. But
Skeens, yes. Skubal, I'd rather not because you have more control over Skeens.
Okay, Gino, would you trade Schlittler?
Yes.
Schlittler for Skeens. You'd put Schlittler in the deal plus other guys.
Okay. Absolutely. Every day, twice on Sunday for either one of those guys.
I'd trade McLean, and I don't know if I'd trade Schlittler. I mean, maybe for Skeens, I'd have a hard time with it. Because the thing about these guys is you're going to have to sign up to 8 to 10 year deals to kind of keep them locked up. And when you do that, you know you'll know. If you get signed an 8 year deal, you know you're not getting more than 6 out of them because you know you're going to have 2 years where you have arm injuries. And I'm not saying that. And listen, I watched McLean with that movement and that spin, that Joe Musgrove overspin on whatever he's got. And you feel like his arm's going to fall off. But maybe it doesn't because he's built like a football player. For Schlittler, it looks so effortless, but it doesn't mean his arm isn't going to fall off. I don't know. I guess I'm concerned. Jake?
Here's the counter. The counter is, do you regret signing Cole for all that money?
Nope.
Well, then there it is. So if it's a pitcher at that level, and we're going to assume based on the last couple of years, Skeens and Skubal are that level, or as close to that level as you can get, then you can't have the money. The contract can't get in there. If I'm going to get 4 years of almost Cy Young level pitching from either one of them? Yes. The answer is yes. I know you guys like the Kings.
Do you not think Schwindler has a chance to excel to that level? And do you not think that McLean has a chance to excel to that level? So that's really what
it comes down to. My answer is I don't know. But I know what I'm getting with either one of those All-Stars.
Yep.
I guess I agree. I just much like you, Gino, I love my homegrown guys. But
I know you do.
Me and Kev do more than you. I get it. Know. And it's not that it's wrong. It's just a big debate. And, you know, everybody's tossing around. Well, I'd give Tong, and I'd give, you know, Sproat, and I'd give Jet Williams, and everybody's throwing these things out. And Scoop's only 1 year, so you can't give that much because in a year he's a free agent. You probably will re-sign him, but you don't know. And you probably wouldn't make the deal unless you had a contract in place. For Skeens, though, like you said, there's more control. Anyway, yep. That was all I had for baseball. I just had a quick point. But, right. Kev, you have some stuff to talk about. You have some gems, no?
Yeah.
Let's some hidden gems.
Let's start with our baseball one. So Yamamoto and Snell become the first teammates to go 8 or more innings, 1 run or less in the first 2 games of a series since the 1983 National League Championship Series. Jerry Royce and Fernando Valenzuela.
Wow.
Wow, that's really cool.
Looking back to last Thursday, we'll get into the football part of it in a minute or two. The Phillies were eliminated, and the Eagles lost, and the Flyers lost. Only one other time has a city had all three situations, and a baseball team get eliminated from the playoffs, plus the NFL team, plus the NHL team lose in the same day. The 1983 Philadelphia. So it's only happened twice to the city, both times to Philly.
Couldn't be happier.
Couldn't happen to a nicer city, could it?
Wow.
This week, Thursday night's game, we've got the Steelers and the Bengals, a matchup of Joe Flacco and Aaron Rodgers. Only one other time, or one other combination of 40-year-old starters in NFL history. Any idea?
Was Blanda one of them? Are we going back that far?
No, not that far.
Okay.
It's actually fairly recent.
Fairly recent 40-year-old starters. Yeah, I don't want to waste your time. I can't think of anything right now.
Brady and Breeze.
Ah.
Three times when they matched up Bucks and Saints in the division. Only other time the 40-year-old starting quarterbacks facing off against each other.
You know what? I just didn't put them together because I couldn't find them in the same conference. That's great. And they were obviously in the NFC South. I always think of Brady as the Patriot that beats me twice a year.
A couple of college ones here. Last 386 days, 46 different teams have won more ACC games than Florida State. They have not won an ACC game in 386 days.
It's horrible.
Wow.
And sticking with the ACC, Notre Dame since 2014, where they play that half schedule against the conference, they're 49-10. Only Clemson with 80 and Miami with 50 have more wins than Notre Dame against the ACC.
That's amazing.
I mean, come on. Everybody else plays a full schedule.
No doubt about it. Notre Dame does, though, kind of pick the team somewhat. So they'll play BC and teams on the bottom rung, but nonetheless, still played half the games and still winning is still very impressive.
Yep. And, of course, we'll get to the hockey point later, but the Rangers have become the first team to be shut out in their first 3 home games in NHL history.
But you want to know the most interesting stat about that?
Yes.
Do you know Shesterkin's stats?
Oh, they're incredible.
Igor Shesterkin is 1-3 with a .76 goals against and a .972 save percentage.
Yeah.
You can't make it up. I mean, they just don't score goals. I mean, the guy's playing out of his mind, but it doesn't matter. Anyway.
Yep.
It's freaking crazy.
Yeah, those are some of my hidden gems for the week.
Thank you, Kev.
All right. Let's head over to the NFL. So let's start with locally. Broncos beat the Jets 13-11. Broncos defense recorded 9 sacks, held the Jets to 82 yards of offense. Giants, on the other hand, played last Thursday night, beat the Eagles 34-17. Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo had really big games. They combined for 5 touchdowns. Eagles looking very listless lost their second straight loss. Let's start with the Jets. Kev.
17 pass attempts and 9 sacks, so 26 passing plays. If he had spiked the ball all 26 times, that would have been better than if they had run up actual plays. Think of it that way. Negative 10 yards passing as a team.
Wow.
Freaking ridiculous. 9 sacks. Darren, what would you say about 2? Were probably the offensive line's fault?
Yeah, I mean, there was a play where Fashanu got beaten bad by Benito. He just beat him with speed. There was one other where Membo got beaten.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I felt like he stepped up, didn't throw it, then stood there, and then I'd rather have Jackson Dart, where him play like Jackson Dart, where first read isn't there, I run. But instead, he goes through his progression slowly, knowing the blitz is coming against a good defensive line, and does nothing with it. It's just hard to watch.
I mean, you mentioned it during the preseason, in our prediction, saying, you guys are going to get tired of Justin Fields. I didn't realize it was this bad.
I didn't watch
it. You look at his stats, and he takes a lot of sacks. Maybe the reason he doesn't throw interceptions is because he doesn't throw the damn ball.
Oh, yeah, his stats look great. No picks, 5 starts, so no pick, but he doesn't throw it.
Yeah, when you don't throw it down the field at all. The defense, much better, gave up 250 yards.
One of the playmakers was back. Just Jermaine's presence, even though he was on a pitch count, so to speak, he makes a difference out there.
Oh, does he ever?
Listen, Sherwood had a monster game. I mean, probably the best game I've seen him have since that first Patriot game where he took over for Mosley.
Yeah.
And he made tackles and stuff. But Johnson's presence is a huge difference for this team, Kev.
Yes, it is. And then 2 penalties for 15 yards. Cleaned that up big time this week. But, to me, the end of the first half, what the was Aaron Glenn doing? You run the fake punt. To get the first down, you take a timeout with a minute left. You're at the 40-yard line. You run hole for 5. Okay, Fields gets sacked for 2. You take a timeout with 37 seconds left to set up 3rd and 7. Completes a 6 yards to Reynolds. And then they let the last 30 seconds run off. I know they don't have any timeouts. Denver's just looking and going, okay, you want to run the clock off? Go ahead. How do you not... At the very least, line up, snap, and throw a Hail Mary. At the very least.
Well, it's an indictment on the fact they have no confidence in Fields throwing the football. And if you're going to play it that way, then at that point, the decision has to be made that for the second half, I go to Tyrod.
Yeah.
But they don't make that decision. Instead, they sit there and give you more to step. Listen, I'm fine with the fact that they gave Breece the ball 22 times for 59 yards. I wanted his hands. He had no holes to run through. I don't care. Keep feeding him as much as you possibly can. But do something a little different. Why not roll out Fields? Why not run more than one RPO in the damn game? Why not sit there and have design quarterback runs? Why not throw on first down to set up the run? But they did none of that. It was like they didn't even – I know Denver's good, but they had 8 and sometimes 9 men in the box, and you're not going to be able to block them with 6. They do the best they can. Breece made how many guys miss in the backfield to make – have incredible 1-yard runs.
Yeah.
It's not fair to the guy, unfortunately.
Listen to that game, watching the game, but listening to Kurt Warner, I thought he was going to lose his mind just with – Him spotting open receivers and Fields not throwing the ball. I mean, so apparently if Warner could see the receivers open, why the hell can't Fields find at least one guy open?
And the thing about it is you saw Wilson get hurt, but the thing you watch with Fields is he never releases the ball before the receiver finishes his break. It's almost like he has to see it before he throws it, like in the opposite way of not visualizing seeing it, but actually see it happen. And then every throw is behind or late. It's like nobody's really ever caught in stride. It's almost like a college quarterback. Remember how great Vince Young was in college, right? And then comes to the NFL, and it's not just a bunch of guys that are just standing there in open zones where he's picking them apart. And we saw week 1, Kev, and we were like, wow, I don't know how Pittsburgh gave up on this guy. Yeah. And then you watch him in week 6, and you're like, now I know why Russell Wilson had to get the job. Yeah. It's like, Geno, you were the guy that called it in the preseason. You were the one.
But listen, I called it, but it's called based on the stats. I mean, you know, in his first 3 years in Chicago, he got sacked 36 times in 10 games that he started. The second year, 55 sacks in 15 starts and 44 sacks the last year in 13 starts. He's taken 170 sacks in 49 games started, including this year. But, yeah, you know, and I'm looking at Pro Football Reference. That's why I'm giving it to you. But his 17 game average is 53 sacks. You can't play winning football that way, because at some point it's not the offensive line. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And listen, the funny thing about it is the defense, like you said, Kev, played well enough to win this game. Nwangu coming back in special teams is such a difference maker as a returner. I know he had the one one, but every single one of them is good. Nick Folk has been outstanding. I would have rather tried the 61-yard field goal than let him throw on fourth down, because genius takes a sack anyway. It doesn't really matter. And he had time. It's not like he didn't have time. Sometimes you get the all-out blitz and there's nothing you can do. That didn't happen there. And
he held the ball.
We can't even think about throwing a screen or a check down at the Breece ever. Mason Taylor was invisible. Unbelievable. I don't even know what the word to use. It was exhausting.
So I got a question to you. We don't see this in pro football anymore for whatever reason, but most of these coaches never go to the backup quarterback and then next game come back to the starter. It's very rare that it happens. And I don't know why we've gotten away from that, because last week, and Darren, you said this, had Tyrod Taylor actually played the second half, you probably would have won the game.
We would have been a team on the field. And I mean, two-thirds of the our defense play well enough to win, our special teams play well enough to win.
Yeah.
I mean, the first two drives alone, they were handed possession, 30-yard line and in, and got two field goals because they had like 2 yards of offense.
They didn't get a first down. They didn't get a first down forever in that game.
With 3:20 left in the first half, the yardage was 175-1.
And the thing about it is, I know Sauce missed the coverage and gave up the touchdown. I get it. But he blanketed Sutton all day. Sutton had one catch. I mean, even Sauce played one of his best games of the year. And Phillips clogging up the middle. They didn't run the ball. And everything was working real well. Special teams was dominant. And we didn't even try on offense. And at one point, that's on Glenn. Because at some point, you got to say, these guys are playing too hard for me to lose the game with them with this guy playing quarterback. And you can, like you said, Gino, go back to Fields next week. He should be start him up against Carolina again. Let him watch Tyrod for a half, and let's see if he picks something up. When we go over film, see what Tyrod did. See what you did in the first half. See what he did in the second half. Listen, there's no guarantee Tyrod's going to play great, but you know he's serviceable. You know he's good enough to start in this league to an extent, at least a couple of years back he was. And you know he would be able to handle and read a blitz.
He'll at least throw the ball.
Yeah, he will.
The NFL does not. The last couple of years, at least, because I have rarely seen it the last 2-3 years, they never go to, and I'm going to use this term, the relief pitcher with the second quarterback for a quarter or a half, and then the next week go back to their starter. And I don't know if it's because they think it's an indictment on their starter, but, you know, games like last week, that was there. It was there for the taking, and, you know, it fell through. Jets move to 0-6. We'll see if they come out and actually play a little inspired football this week. They get the Panthers at home, so we'll see if that helps them at all. Back from London.
Yep.
Giants, they beat the Eagles 34-17 on Thursday. Wow. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Giants play great. And we talked about it last week that the Eagles look like there's something up, and it continued. And I'm not trying to take it away from the Giants, because Dart brings an excitement. Scatterboo certainly brings in excitement. Brian Burns is playing great off the edge this year. The old line seems like, especially when Andrew Thomas is playing, seems like it's kind of coming together a little bit. And, you know, this team's – and they cleared up $4 million in cap today. They restructured a couple of contracts. So, you know, they're trying to bring a receiver in to help out for Dart, because they think that they have a shot to go somewhere. Now, at the same point in time this week, you go to Denver, and that's a different animal. That's a tough place to play. So you don't rate it off this weekend. But overall, there's nothing not to be impressed about. They're doing everything right, and you feel like, you know, if these two guys continue to develop, and you have, you know, you have the depth coming. Theo Johnson's a nice tight end. Neighbors coming back next year. You get another wide receiver to play along with, and you have two third receivers now. They become a three and a four. You know, you feel like there's a makings of an offense that'll be there. I don't know if Dable will see it, I don't know if Shane will see it, but at least you finally see the makings of an offense. And for the first time in a long time, the Giants are the more fun team to watch. Yeah. Locally, not that the Jets have been that exciting, but at least there's been drama. The Giants have had nothing, no drama and no excitement. Now at least the Giants have some excitement. I mean, we saw it last year watching Scadaboo play. He was fun to watch when we saw Arizona State play. He was bouncing off everybody. And you don't realize how short he is until you see him next to the other guys. Yeah. And Jackson Dart, you know, listen, he was always someone that you kind of like what you saw. You saw the athletic ability, saw the ability to throw. Listen, I picked Ole Miss to win the championship last year. That's how high I was with Jackson Dart. And I wasn't as high on him in the draft as Geno was, but I was high on him. And, you know, listen, the Giants are doing a lot of things well right now. Don't know if they're deep enough to survive many more injuries. That would be the one thing. Kev?
Yeah, they brought in Juice Wells this week.
And there we go.
Former Ole Miss wide receiver, Dart's teammate. Before that,
he's a guy that couldn't make 32 other rosters, so it makes you a little 31 other rosters, so it makes you a little bit skeptical. But doesn't mean right. I would have to think that they're going to try to find someone on a team that's tanking.
Yeah, so somebody's got to be available, and you know, I think the way this team is performing right now, with the excitement that these two kids have brought to the team, you've got to do something to bring them another weapon in here.
Yeah. They've deserved it. They earned it.
Yeah.
The New Orleans Saint wide receivers are the ones that I keep hearing thrown around in trade talks.
A lot.
Raheed Shaheed. Maybe it's Shaheed because unless the Giants are willing to pay a hefty price, I don't think Olave is going to come really cheap in a trade. So,
yeah.
But it could be a building block. I mean, it could be so. All right, let's go around the NFL. We'll touch on some games. Kev?
Just on that game, though, that one sequence there on the Eagles touchdown to make it 17-13 with the four straight tush pushes, have we seen?
It's enough to watch, yeah.
Will we see it finally outlawed this year?
No.
It was two votes shy last year.
I still don't think it's getting through.
The fact is that there's only one way to stop it, Kev. You have to call the false
the penalties.
Start. You have to call the lined up in the helmet in the neutral zone. You have to keep calling that because every time you go from fourth and a half a yard to 4th and 5.5, that tush push comes out. But if they don't blow the freaking whistle, I'd rather nothing be banned that's not illegal and then just enforce the penalty because they are offside, not every play, but enough.
A lot.
It's noticeable for all of us.
They're offside. It's like
watching Juwan Taylor line up at tackle. I mean, this week was probably the best game I've ever seen him do it. But normally, he's in the backfield. And they call it once or twice a game. Call it 9 times. Make him learn. This week, he wasn't as bad. But normally, you're just like, what the hell? That tush push is another thing where he's always offside. I feel like watching the, you know, Remember the Titans. He's lining up offside. You see Denzel Washington yelling at the ref.
Yeah.
And because that's what they're doing. And the center's helmet is in the neutral zone before the snap. You can't do that.
Yeah. But how do you referee it unless you're like right on top of it? Because you've got all the bodies in that tight area.
I don't know how we have to do it, but there's gonna have to be a way that they figure out and they call. Even if you're not sure, blow the whistle. It'll end it.
Yeah.
They should just instruct the referees to end the tush push by doing it like that. Because otherwise, because every time, and you know, they'll watch the replay. Oh, we apologize. We missed it. You know what? But it'll still stop the play from happening. They don't want to lose 5 yards on a 4th and 1. Nobody does.
It was ridiculous to see 4 tush pushes to get 4 yards and a touchdown. It was just, that's not football. Come on.
Now, the funny part about it, though, Kev, and then we'll go to the other game, G, I'm sorry, is you feel like if they just gave it to Saquon, he would get it 95% of the time anyway. And I'm not trying. Yes. It's not like we're giving it to like the Jets behind a crap line and then not trying to insult Breece. We have to make two guys miss in the backfield just to get to the line of scrimmage. You feel like their line would hold up somewhat, and you give it to Saquon, and he would get it anyway. It's not even like you have to do it like this stupid way that they do it. This might
I agree. Been. I agree. All right. Let's go around the NFL. So Seahawks beat the Jags. Both teams are at 4-2. Seahawks sacked Trevor Lawrence 7 times. They held the Jags offense in check. It was one of the better games of the weekend, by the way.
G, on that one real quick, Jackson Smith and Jigman has just emerged. He's become an unstoppable force. And
eight for 162.
They just can't seem to cover him. And then the other thing I noticed with this one is that they were playing without both starting cornerbacks, and they still held Jacksonville in check. So that was pretty impressive to me.
Yep. Rams beat the Ravens. Ravens moved to 1-5. They beat them 17-3. Puka Nacua had an injury in that game. We'll see how many weeks he's out. Chargers beat the Dolphins. They moved to 4-2.
Probably the game of the day. Well, one of them. Listen, competitive-wise, not skill-wise. But Dolphins had a nice major comeback. Everybody picked the Chargers to cover. They didn't get it. All the people are pissed. But the Dolphins showed a little heart in this one. But, again, McDaniels has no idea what he's doing, Kev.
And then choked it away at the end with the field goal.
Then Tua calls out his teammates, to which other teammates or former teammates call out him. So it's very exciting what's going on down in Miami.
How much longer
Coach Fryer has a real good chance of being McDaniels.
Colts beat the Cardinals. They moved to 5-1.
The Cardinals play well in games where they're not supposed to. So the games are supposed to win. They were up this game. They probably should have won it.
Patriots beat the Saints 25-19. Drake May threw for 261 yards. They now are ahead in the AFC East.
Yep.
Steelers beat the Browns. They moved to 4-1. Aaron Rodgers threw for 2 touchdowns.
Well, you feel bad for guys like Myles Garrett and the guys on the Cleveland defense because they don't have a competent quarterback either, much like we're talking about with the Jets.
Bucks beat the Niners 30-19. Bucks moved to 5-1. Niners 4-2. Baker Mayfield threw for 256-2. Led the injury depleted Bucks to the win over the 49ers. Kev?
5-1 record. It's the first time this year they've lined up in the victory formation.
Always won on the last play with the kick.
Wow.
And Baker's run, his scramble from the sack was probably as good a play as I've seen in years.
Yep.
It was listen, I'm not a Baker guy. Kev is. So I don't root for him as hard, but you can't not admire the toughness of this guy.
He is the first 6-game MVP of the season.
He's right there. And the funny part about it is, he should be anyway, I should say. Funny part about it is you said injury depleted Bucks. The 49ers also, and then they lose Fred Warner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raiders beat the Titans 20-10. Only reason I bring it up is because Titans fired head coach Brian Callahan after the game. 4-19 record led to his dismissal. Mike McCoy takes over as interim coach.
Seven of the last eight first overall pick quarterbacks. The coaches have been fired within the first 2 years.
Yeah. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's a bad team. Of
bad
course.
Team.
They get the number one pick, but there's no stability to let the quarterback develop.
Still makes sense with the NFL the way it is right now, Kev. Packers beat the Bengals 27-18.
Impressed by Flacco in this one, by the way. He actually stood in there and he brought him back a little bit. And you saw what a competent quarterback hitting Chase and Higgins can do on a team that really has nothing on defense. And not much anywhere else. But he stood there as a statue behind a bad offensive line, Kevin. He looked all right, Kev.
And Tomlin's pissed off post-game for him. How does a team trade their week one starting quarterback to another team in the division?
He was pissed.
Who has a hole of quarterback.
He's like, it doesn't make sense to me. And then Flacco tried to beat Green Bay twice in Green Bay in the same season. That would have been exciting with two different teams.
Carolina beat the Cowboys 30-27 on a game-winning field goal.
Money line, baby. Money line. Plus 64. Rico Dowdle said strap on the chin strap, and he got 230 yards of total offense.
Yep. Then we get to Sunday night. Chiefs beat the Lions 30-17. Chiefs to 3-3. Lions to 4-2. Mahomes threw for 3 touchdowns. Russ for another. Chiefs convincingly defeated the Lions, snapping their 4-game win streak. We had a little chaos after the game developed as Brian Branch delivered a right hook to the Chiefs wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster as the teams were coming together midfield, touching off a brief melee amongst the players. Darren?
Well, a couple things in this one. First of all, Rashee Rice comes back this week. So you saw the Chiefs difference with Worthy back. Now with Rice, Worthy, you know, Kelce being like a fourth option almost, but Hollywood Brown being the third, the Chief offense is going to really start to explode soon. They just need to play the kid at running back a little bit more to get the speed out there.
Pacheco still doesn't look right, and I have him in 3 fantasy leagues. He still does not look right. I'm sorry.
No. They got to play 24. What's his name? Was it Bernard Pierce? I think. It's not Pierce. Pierce played for the. I'm blanking on the name. The rookie out of SMU. I'm blanking on his name, and it's driving me nuts. Hunt looks better than Pacheco does right now, and the short yardage plays, and he always seems to get him. Chiefs play without their left tackle in this one. The melee was weird, right? And I'm going to defend Branch and I'm going to hammer Branch at the same time.
Okay. So
they're walking off the field. Mahomes goes to try to shake his hand and Branch acts like a child, right? Just ignores him. So he just taps on the shoulder. Then Juju says something to him about it and Branch punches him. What they're saying is that during the game, Juju called Branch an orphan because his parents died when he was a kid. And that's what set him off. Now I understand why he hit Juju. Still, you never see NFL players ignore another player after a game. That's especially two kind of star-like players like Branch and Mahomes. It's not something that's done. So Branch acted like an idiot to Mahomes, who probably didn't say a word to him. But at the same point in time, the only thing he said all game was when Hutchinson hit him really late. Said, "What the fuck are you doing?" was his line. Excuse my terminology. But then I understand why he hits Schuster. So I just don't see that. You know, you're supposed to be a man after the game and shake hands, or if you're not, you just kind of walk off the field and ignore. But you don't brush by a player, and when he tries to shake your hand, ignore him. You just don't see it, Kev.
Again, not to excuse his actions after the game, but you also saw early in the game there was a running play that went to Kansas City's right, and Branch is on the left, and Juju basically from his blind side, from behind, shot to the back. Should have definitely been a block in the back. I mean, he was totally out of the play. So that action plus what you said about the calling him an orphan and everything else, I think the combination, everything just boiled up within Branch.
Yeah, but
and like I said, not to excuse what he did after those games.
It excuses the Smith-Schuster part, but the Mahomes part is still acting like a petulant child and grow up. You're in the NFL now. This isn't freaking Peewee League football. You grow up, be a man. But at the same point in time, you know, I had no problem with him knocking out Smith-Schuster.
Okay. Player rumor mill, by the way, for trades, has Kamara maybe going to the Chiefs.
See, the Chiefs or Chargers are the two front runners, right? They're both the teams that need him, even though Vidal looked great last week for the Chargers.
The other running back that has been mentioned in there is Breece Hall.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
So, Kev, do you think we're going to re-sign Breece?
No.
Then you got to trade him. I hate to say it, but there's no reason just to let him walk.
Yeah.
Might as well get a second-round pick for him and move on.
All right. We got 2 games for Monday night. We'll go through. So Bears beat the Commanders 25-24. Bears overcame an 8-point fourth-quarter deficit capped by a last-second 38-yard field goal from Jake Moody after a crucial Jaden Daniels fumble around the 2-minute mark, which just took all the air out of my balloon, I'll tell you right now. God, do they miss McLaurin, man. I wish he would be back from this injury as soon as possible. They miss him so much going downfield. It's ridiculous. And it's to the point now where I think it's actually really interfering with the rest of the offense, too, now. I thought they were spreading it out. Everybody was getting a little couple of catches here and there. It was dividing it up. You could really see it now. It's bad.
Now they rely on Ertz so much, who's like 55 years old. And he's playing great. It's not a shot at
Debo.
Debo to an extent, but they held him in check last week.
I know. That's what happens. I know.
And then Bill right, running the ball, and that's it. I mean, but they need McLaurin because he opens up and he stretches the entire field.
Yep. All right, last game, Falcons beat the Bills 24-14. Penix led a Falcon upset back by standout performances from Bijan Robinson. He had 170 yards running, 238 total. Drake London had a big game, 10 for 158. Bills fall to 4-2 and out of first place in the AFC East. Darren?
Bijan Robinson is the best player in the NFL. He's the most exciting player in the NFL. I'll put it that way. He makes cuts like Barry Sanders. I haven't seen anyone do that since Barry, where he could stop on a dime and then accelerate. I mean, Gibbs is real close. I'm not saying it's like 1-2. I'm saying 1-1A. But
no, you're right.
The other thing I noticed, I don't think Penix is the answer. I don't think Penix is all that good. I think Penix makes a lot of mistakes. I think Penix throws late. I think I don't think Michael Penix is going to be I don't think he's the kind of starting quarterback with the talented running back and the talented receiver and the tight end that should be talented. I don't think he's the quarterback that can lead them far into anything special with that team should have. It's almost like Barry Sanders again, without having, it was his best quarterback was Eric Kramer all those years. You know, they need to get, I know it's only a second year, but it just seems like everything takes forever for him to release the ball. He seems late on things unless it's a zone. And I don't know. He doesn't have great ball placement to me.
I could see that. I really can. Cause you can tell right away that it's not good at all. So,
and the Bills' two straight losses, it looks like they really could use a wide receiver also. That wide receiving core does not scare you at all.
Absolutely.
I got a great stat on the Bills later.
Absolutely.
and a good one on the Bears, by the way, too.
Keon Coleman and Shakir are not fooling anybody out there. Kincaid can only do so much from the tight end position.
Yep.
So, yeah, I completely agree with you. I think Olave's in play for them, too. That would be the guy.
James Cook enough out of the backfield.
Yeah.
He's like almost an impossible guy to stop.
Yeah.
Philly, Minnesota this week, I think, is a real intriguing one, right? And I guess Indy and the Chargers, Washington, Dallas, those are probably the three biggest. Atlanta, San Francisco. I mean, and Monday night, it's actually a good doubleheader, but they have them 7-10. So the odds of me staying up for Houston, Seattle, which is a game I would normally try to watch. I like the 7-8 because the 7-10 has no shot for me.
Oh, they are doing 7-10? Okay.
7-10. Tampa, Detroit, get to watch that one. It's probably the game of the weekend, by the way.
Yeah.
And then Houston, Seattle is a pretty good one. Houston playing well, coming off a bye. And that one starts at 10 o'clock on the East Coast. It's going to be a little late.
That's not even worth putting on because I
don't want to get myself trapped into something going to bed at 11:30 at the half. I can't do it.
If it's a good game, 11:30, and you're sitting there going half asleep, and before you know it, you're up watching it.
Yeah, no, I can't even take the risk.
I can't do that.
I can't do it. I'm too old.
All right. I have not been good with King's Ransom bets, but we got a couple for you this week.
This is the week, Jake.
First one, Philadelphia -2.5 with a Barkley touchdown and a Justin Jefferson touchdown, +600. Second one is going to be a 4-team money line parlay.
Why not?
No player props involved, okay? Just to win outright. Chiefs, Broncos, Commanders, and the Patriots +218. And the third one, this goes with the Colts. They've been so hot right now. Let's get in on what they're doing. 3-player prop. Taylor with the touchdown, Taylor with 100 yards rushing, and oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this, Daniel Jones with 200 yards passing. +380. Those are the King's Ransom bets for week 7 NFL.
Do you know you laughed at me when I picked the Colts to win that division?
I did.
Kev looked shocked. You actually laughed at me.
Daniel Jones. Right. What? Daniel Jones?
Just the offensive line. That was
You mentioned it, but I think Chargers home for the Colts this week is just huge. I want to see if the Chargers have anything with all those offensive line injuries and how good the Colts are on the road for games like this. Cause this is what it's going to come down to, you know, that they're accumulating a lot of wins against some bad teams here and there, but games like this is where you're going to show if they're actually that good or not, if Daniel Jones is going to play this good on the road. So we'll see. That's a game I'm looking at, by the way. All right, let's go to college. Darren.
So James Franklin gets fired. So just put it this way, okay? 15 days before the firing, this guy has had the third-ranked team in the country getting ready for a big game against Oregon.
Yeah.
Has the lead in that game in overtime by 7. And 15 days later, he's out. So we had 3 coaches fired this weekend. So we lost James Franklin there. Trent Dilfer got fired at UAB. Trent Bray, 0-7 at Oregon State, also got let go. So along with Sam Pittman, Mike Gundy, Deshaun Foster, and Brent Pry, we have 7 coaches fired midseason, which is, I think, very high.
Yeah.
We don't see it usually for teams like that. But, Kev, I think we said it last week. I think it was time. I think they had to make the move.
4-21 against the top 10. I mean, it does a great job of winning, beating who he needs to. Last 3.5 years, only Kirby Smart, Ryan Day, and Kellen DeBoer had more wins than James Franklin, but he could not win the big one. He got Penn State. I mean, he did a great job coming out of the Paterno Sandusky scandal, got Penn State back, got them in the right direction, got them to a certain level, but he can't break through. They need to bring in a new coach to break through. We said in the preseason this was sort of championship type or bust year. And obviously with back-to-back losses as 20-point underdogs, 20-point favorites, I should say, I think Penn State had no choice but to let him go. And especially with Drew Aller out for the year now, too, with his injury in the last game. Penn State will be lucky if they even sniff a bowl game.
I mean, yeah, here's the whole thing. I mean, you're 100% right, Kev. And this is he's a program builder. He's not a finisher.
Yep.
And there's going to be a mid-level team in a major conference. I'm just throwing out random teams, Virginia Tech, say, because they fired their coach, who's going to love having, James Franklin coach them and make them respectable. And it would make Kev happy. That's why I mentioned Virginia Tech. That means that he wouldn't lose his guy, Beamer. But, it's going to be something like that that's going to make the difference. And he will bring them up to respectability until they start feeling like, wow, we should be better than this. But Penn State's a blue blood. And a blue blood can't not win the big one ever. And that's what he's been doing. He's not been winning the big one ever.
Would he be an upgrade over, say, Napier in Florida?
Well, yeah, Napier's – I heard everything I'm hearing is that Napier's out this Sunday regardless, win or lose.
Wow.
Because it's Mississippi State. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
If they lose to Mississippi State, he's out. If they beat Mississippi State, unless they do something amazing, he's out again. So that's what I'm hearing about Napier. So, yes, I think that would be it. I think it would be an upgrade over Napier, but I don't know if they want a program builder or if they want a program finisher in Florida.
Right.
Florida fired Dan Mullen, who wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
So it's interesting there. Couple games just to roll through here. And Kev, you chime in where you want. Ohio State rolled over Illinois. Really wasn't much of a game. At Illinois, it's a big win in Champaign. They rolled through. Ole Miss struggled mightily at home, obviously looking past, Washington State as they have the big one at Georgia this week, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes, guys. But Ole Miss did not do the job. They were actually effective on third down, effective on fourth down, outgained them by 100 yards, but trailed most of this game. So very interesting there. Bama, Mizzou, Ty Simpson again completing, whatever percent of his passes, doesn't throw any picks, 3 touchdowns. They get a late pick. Alabama, who doesn't run the ball well, found a way to have the ball for 38 minutes in this game.
Yeah.
And, but the yardage was 325 to 324. So it's like, it wasn't like they had a huge yardage advantage, but they just keep moving the change. And Ty Simpson does a great job. Also, Missouri 1-for-11 on third down. Kev?
Missouri was 2-1 versus Alabama before entering the SEC. They are now 2-6.
Wow. and we said.
Yeah, I mean, Missouri did a nice job. I mean, they had a touchdown with a minute 40 left to pull the 3, got the 3 and out, had the ball, and threw the late pick. I mean, they really had a shot there.
No, absolutely. Texas blew out Oklahoma. Mateer came back probably too soon, 3 picks. They were up 6-0 or 6-3 in this game, and then Texas kind of pulled away. Special teams touchdown late kind of put it out of reach there.
Oh, that's
and
the
Red River rivalry goes to Texas.
75-yard punt return was huge.
Turned it around.
Texas has beaten Oklahoma 3 of the last 4 years. In the Red River, the 3 Oklahoma losses, they scored 0, 3, and 6 points.
Texas defense came to play. Georgia Auburn. This is probably the weirdest and strangest game of the entire weekend. And if you watched it, which Kev may not have watched it live because he had South Carolina LSU on at the same time, so I'm not trying to be a jerk with it. Auburn was up 10-0 this game and about to go up 17-0. Yep. Do the quarterback sneak. Listen, it's real close. You could say that the ball crossed the plane. You could say that it was coming loose. It's really hard to tell. The call went to Georgia, and all of a sudden it kind of just kind of spiraled out of control for Auburn, whose offense couldn't do anything. But there were five long reviews in this game, and it really took the life out of this game. Also, there was a play where Kirby Smart called timeout with no timeouts left. Then he claimed he was clapping. And they overturn it, and they give him the call for clapping where he's clearly saying timeout while he's doing it.
Timeout.
How in the world does that happen? If you're an Auburn fan, you're livid because you felt like the SEC did everything in their power to make sure Georgia won this game. Yep. And we knew going to Jordan-Hare on a Saturday night's brutal. We knew it was brutal.
Hell yeah.
And Auburn probably could have won this game, but Georgia, once they got it going, Auburn had no offense. Arnold is not the answer. He wasn't the answer at Oklahoma. He's not the answer at Auburn.
Yep.
And that's the way it kind of went. But way too many reviews, in my opinion, on this one. USC blew out Michigan. Bye-bye, Michigan. Wow. They're a poser. I like USC. I bet them big in this game. I love them. Utah crushed Arizona State, but they were playing without Levitt. But that game was 42-10. Just blew them out.
Dampier did a great job. 104 yards passing, 120 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns. Utah, 276 rushing as a team.
Texas Tech blew away Kansas after Morton got hurt. Kansas kind of came back in the game. I had Texas Tech laying some pretty good points in this one. And then Kansas cut it to 4, and then Texas Tech just took off on them. So it was a big win for them. And A&M just blew out Florida again. They pulled away. It was close early, and then A&M just kind of pulled away.
14-14 after one, and then A&M just took over.
And the big one, guys, I didn't see it coming. Indiana 30, Oregon 20. Indiana was the better team. You watch this game from beginning to end. Indiana was better than Oregon was. I thought Oregon's speed would be too much. I was wrong. Indiana was – and Mendoza's an upgrade over Rourke from last year.
Yep.
And, wow, this Indiana team might be the best team in the country the way they played at Oregon this week, Kev. I was very impressed.
They held Oregon to 267 yards of offense, which is unheard of. The way Moore was looking this year, and the way Oregon's offense, usually, like you said, with the speed, just is so much better than everybody else. Great defensive job by Indiana. And Mendoza, he's a good, tough kid in that pocket there.
No doubt about it. So that's a recap. This week, just a couple of big games just to touch on. I'm sorry, Kev, I missed something. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one other game just to mention, because it's a group of five leader, I think, USF.
Blew out North Texas.
This was a 21-21 game at halftime. 4 touchdowns in the third quarter. They pulled it away 63-36. 580 yards of offense.
I'm going to give
you – that was one of my picks last week, Kev.
I'm going to give you an interesting stat on this one because I have it right here. Hold on 1 second, because this was one that really impressed me with and it was really about North Texas. It wasn't about it wasn't about South Florida at all, which is kind of weird to say it like that, right? But where is it? Do I have it here? Hold on. I'm sorry. No, I don't have it. There was an interesting that the offensive coordinator for North Texas, he recruited Mahomes. He coached Baker Mayfield. He has all these guys in his thing, and now he's got this new kid at North Texas, and he's got them going too. So I'm just saying there's a lot of things going on offense. But USF, they put the USF Memphis. We said it last week. That's going to be the game that decides. Memphis has the second longest winning streak in the country. USF is playing great, Kev.
And last week, we were talking Big 12, and we mentioned Texas Tech versus BYU, maybe deciding it. BYU, 10 points in the last 5 minutes to tie it against Arizona, won it in double overtime. Another quarterback, Bear Brockmeyer, he's fun to watch too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good player, and was struggled early. Threw 2 picks in the first half in that one. Then I went to bed. But I didn't see the highlights the next day.
I was stupid enough to watch the end of the game. 30
starts are too much for me. This week, it's a big one because Georgia Tech needs it. Georgia Tech at Duke. Duke has a big-time defense. Georgia Tech's big-time offense. Haynes Kings continues to play great. USC at Notre Dame. Neither team can afford the loss here.
Yep.
It's in October, which means it's at Notre Dame. If it's in November, that means it's at USC. That's just the way it works out every year. I think that this is crucial. Notre Dame can't afford the loss. USC can't afford the loss. Texas Tech goes to Arizona State. If Levitt plays, it's a big game. because then Arizona State will be knocked out. This is probably Texas Tech's toughest game left. You got the Battle of Utah, BYU hosting Utah, 23-15. Huge rivalry. Utah actually a favorite on the road in this one right now.
Yeah.
Both teams obviously need it. Utah already lost to Texas Tech. BYU trying to stay undefeated for that matchup. SEC, LSU, Vandy. Vandy comes off a bye after a tough loss at Bama. LSU beat South Carolina, but they weren't really great offensively. Defense looked good.
They haven't been great all year.
And Vandy is a slight favorite in this one over LSU at home. When was the last time you saw that happen? Then we get two big ones, G. All right. We're going to pick both of these games because they're huge. Both SEC games, both on ABC back to back. You don't have to change the channel. So we start off number 5, Ole Miss, goes to number 9, Georgia, Sanford Stadium, 3:30 afternoon. Ole Miss undefeated, still struggled last week, but still rolling along. Georgia has the one loss, can't afford the second loss, but they get to play between the hedges. Georgia, an early 7.5-point favorite. Over on the last I saw was 53.5. Gino, who gets out of Athens, Georgia this week?
Georgia struggled versus the good teams, right? They struggled against Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn. They can't limit. They got to limit Ole Miss's passing game. Are they going to have trouble getting to Trinidad? I don't know. I think this is like a one possession game in the final minutes. Give me Ole Miss to stay undefeated in a close one. I like the points
on the money line. Okay.
I know, but I'm going to take it on the money line. I like having the points in my pocket, but no, I think they're winning. I don't know, 27-24. I think this is close. Kev?
Yeah, I agree with Gino. This is a very close game. If this was Saturday night between the hedges, I would probably lean more towards Georgia. I think Georgia pulls this one off late. They'll take Ole Miss to cover the 7.5.
You know what? Both of these teams have some things that you love about them, and both of these teams have things you don't like about them. Ole Miss, not great against the run. They can be had in the running game. And if Georgia can establish that running game this week, I think that they can do some things. Problem with Georgia is they start off so slow in all these games, and then they have to try to come back against everybody. Did it against Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn. I'm going to agree with you guys. I don't think they win, G. I just think it's a close game. I think it's within a touchdown. I'm going to say this one goes 31-24 Georgia. In the nightcap. The third Saturday in October, Kev. So this is the traditional game. This is I was watching somebody this week saying that these two teams should wear crimson and orange in this matchup every year. This is Alabama versus Tennessee. Wear your home uniforms and get the crowds out there. Under the lights, Bryant Denny Stadium. Bama's laying 8.5 at this point, over under 58.5 last I saw. Both teams already have a loss, so a second one is devastating. Gino, where are we going?
So no one has stopped Tennessee's offense this season, but yet Tennessee can't stop anyone either. They can't keep anybody out of the end zone. They allow a lot of points. Alabama needs to run the ball versus this Tennessee 121st ranked rushing defense. They're going to have to do that to win this game. Alabama is trying to get their fourth straight ranked win. I think they probably do, but I like the Vols with the points. Give me the Volunteers plus the 8.5. I don't know, 38-31, a lot of points. Look for the over to hit probably. Kev, where are you going?
I like a lot of what you're saying as well. I think it's going to be a very high-scoring game. I'm going to take the Saturday night under the lights in Alabama being the big difference here. I think Bama wins this by 10 to 14 points. So I'll take Bama minus the 8.5.
Yeah, I'm betting the over in this game. That's my bet. I think Alabama will throw the ball on Tennessee and that weak secondary way too easily. I think Aguiar make it exciting for a while, and I just think that Alabama wins this one. I'm going to say it's a little bit – I'm going to say it's a little ugly. I think they're going to win like 51-28. I think they're going to pull away by 20. I think that this is a rivalry. I think – Listen, Alabama had won 8 in a row, then Tennessee had won 2 out of the last 3, or 7 in a row, and then 2 out of the last 3 for Tennessee. I think that Alabama wants to pay him back for the loss last year. I think Alabama kind of beats him up. I just don't think Tennessee can stop him. That's just my take on it.
I'm on Tennessee Island by myself this week, okay?
Yeah, I think it's a blowout, and I'm rooting for Tennessee in this one, by the way, but I don't think they're going to do it.
I almost went Tennessee. I went Alabama at the end. It was
real hard. In Georgia, I went Ole Miss at the end. So there you go. I was back and forth until we actually made the pick. So we got two more picks each. G, let's start with you with your first one.
All right. I'm taking Texas A&M -7.5 at Arkansas. I question Arkansas' ability to stay in this game. They're going to get gashed defensively. They've given up 30-plus points in each of the last four games. I don't think Arkansas can score enough to stay with the Aggies. Give me the Aggies in like a mini route, maybe 38-17, but give me the Aggies -7.5, and they stay undefeated. Kev?
Battle of Utah. I still don't understand how BYU is a home dog.
Me neither.
So I'm going to take BYU +3.5 at home. I'll take a money line to win outright at home. All right. I take your pick there, Darren?
Well, it was one of them, but I have like eight down. I'm going to go with – I picked Georgia Tech to make the playoff. To make the playoff, they have to win this game.
Yeah,
I'm getting 1.5 at Duke. I think Georgia Tech wins the game by 3. I think it's really close. I'm going to take Tech to get through. If you're going to take that bold statement and say they're going to make the playoff, you can't lose at Duke. Georgia Tech wins it. G, what's your final one?
My final one is LSU +2.5 at Vandy. LSU versus ranked opponents has a win versus Clemson, a loss versus Ole Miss. I think Nussmeier needs to avoid the turnovers this week. I think he does. LSU plays a good game. It's a solid opponent, Vandy, but they get the win. LSU 27, Vandy 24. So give me LSU +2.5. Kev?
Yeah, I like that one. That was going to be my third one. Or fourth one, I should say. I'm going to surprise both of you, I think. I'm going to take USC +9.5 at Notre Dame. I haven't been impressed by Notre Dame playing good schools yet. They've beaten up on some cupcakes. I think USC is playing real well right now coming in. I like them +9.5. Notre Dame might pull this one out, but USC is going to cover.
I'm also going to take 9.5 points, but I'm going to take Mississippi State at Florida. I think Mississippi State had the week off. I think Florida, after a tough loss last week, and if Napier's getting blown out, I think he goes out big. I think Mississippi State, I'm going to bet him on the money line this week. I think if they got a shot to win it. Not very easy to win at the Swamp. We're going to find out if Florida comes to play or not, if they're ready. Florida can win this game by 30 or lose this game by 10. I'm going to say they lose this game by 10. I'll take Mississippi State.
That line is 9.5, Darren?
Yeah, that's what I had last, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to bring up one other game here from last weekend. Bad Beats, and I like watching Scott Van Pelt's Bad Beats on SportsCenter Monday night. He had an FCS game. Texas A&M, East Texas A&M, yep, getting 7.5 points versus Lamar. They're up 23-20 with 15 seconds left. Lamar kicks a tying field goal. There's a penalty for leverage. So Lamar gets the first down. They score a touchdown with 3 seconds left. Go up 27-23. The kickoff, East Tennessee fumbles it around, picks it up the 10. Guy makes a blind lateral, and Lamar takes it at the 3 and runs in for the touchdown. Two touchdowns in the last 3 seconds of the game, and East Texas A&M cannot even cover.
Oh, my God.
Getting 7.5. You think you've got this game won with 3 seconds left.
I didn't even know that. Oh my God.
That's crazy.
Like I said, crazy. One of the craziest bad beats I've ever seen.
That's nuts. All right, so here we are. I got a couple of treasures for you guys this week.
All right,
where should I start? NFL, baseball. What do you guys want? Give me one.
Baseball.
Okay, we'll stick over baseball. Len Cicada. We all remember the great Len Cicada. Oh, yeah. He once caught in the 10th inning of a game, and he hadn't caught since he was a kid. So three runners got on first that inning, and all of them took big leads, and they were all picked off by Tippy Martinez. Len Cicada then hit the game-winning homer in the bottom of the 10th. While we're on baseball, umpire Doug Eddings missed 24 calls at the plate in Game 2, strike ball stuff. That was the worst call playoff game since October 7, 2022. Another game called by Doug Eddings. Can we get him out of here now? Third, O'Neill Cruz made history this year, and not the good kind. Cruz had the lowest WAR, a 0.3, of any player with 20-plus homers and 35-plus stolen bases ever. Now I'll go to the NFL. This is the stupid one, right? Back in 2007, the Raiders coaches didn't think Jamarcus Russell was studying his film. So they gave him blank cassettes to take home. The next day he came in and said he watched blitz packages on those blank tapes. The Buffalo Bills, by the way, they have lost two in a row and the bloom's off the rose. The Buffalo Bills have four wins this year against teams with a combined 3-21 record. Okay. Yep. They beat the Ravens, the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Saints. So maybe Buffalo isn't good. Maybe it's just, and they should have lost. And we all know they should have lost the Raven game. The Ravens gave that away.
Yeah.
Final one for this week is the Bears. They've won three games since 2021 when giving up 24-plus points. All three wins with a score of 25-24.
Wow.
The Seattle 12-26-21, the Raiders earlier this year 9-28-25, and then this week Washington 10-13-25. All three wins against the team that gets 25-24, a score you never freaking see. And those are my buried treasures. Gee, I know we're running long today, but let's do a little hockey before we wrap up, right?
All right. So hockey started up last week. Florida Panthers are two-time champions, Stanley Cup winners in 24 and the 25 season, looking to make it three in a row for the first time since, Kev? That's right.
The New York Islanders
of the early 80s.
When we were little children.
But they're dealing with some injuries right now, significant injuries. Matthew Tkachuk, Thomas Nosek, which could impact the three-peat title run. Favorites right now on the board, Carolina at plus 750, Tampa Bay at 800, Edmonton at 850, Vegas at 900, Colorado at 900, and yes, Florida at 1,000. So there are five, six teams in front of them, odds-wise, on them winning the Stanley Cup. Key offseason stuff. Vegas Knights made a big splash after signing Mitch Marner to a huge deal after acquiring his rights from Toronto. Connor McDavid signed a huge friendly team extension. Between him and Draisaitl, they're going to be stuck with two Hall of Famers for a while. Are they going to be able to win anything? We'll see.
Well, they've come for close. Them comes to Skinner.
Yep.
That's a big question. Always. Can he come up with the playoffs?
Right. Do they have enough in goal to win this cup is really the thing. Hurricanes added some players. They're trying to break through after their second franchise championship after reaching the conference finals twice in the last 3 years. We got potential division winners all over the place. Atlanta, Tampa Bay is favored. Metropolitan Division, Hurricanes, Devils right behind them. Central out in the West, Dallas Stars projected to win, but Colorado and Winnipeg will be right there. And the Pacific, Vegas Knights are favored with the Oilers and the Kings in close pursuit. Any comments on just in general on the hockey season as it has just started, guys?
Well, to me, Carolina is probably, if we're gonna look at the conference divisions, Metro Division, Carolina seems like the team to beat, even though all three of our locals are there. Carolina just looks really, really good, and they have great players, and they bring up Ehlers, they get him from Winnipeg to join, which is a big upgrade. You know, like you said, out West, Kev, Skinner's the reason that either Edmonton advances or Edmonton goes home early. Hellebuck, regular season Hellebuck is the best goalie in the league. Postseason Hellebuck is not. Postseason Hellebuck becomes Ottinger, I think, who becomes like this dominant guy in the West. On the East, it's a little bit more of a battle between a few guys, like, mostly Bob. Bob's probably been the most consistent goalie in the playoffs the last couple of years, and obviously Florida proves that. Lot to go over with that stuff, and then the locals all have stories.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Dallas looking at a new coach this year, Glenn Gulutzen in and Pete DeBoer out. I mean, they always seem to make a run in the playoffs, get knocked out in the second round. So I think they're trying to make a shakeup there to see if the coach was the difference or not. LA Kings, Ons Kopitar is playing in his last season. Well, one of the better two way players that. People probably don't realize just how good a two-way player Kopitar has been in his whole career.
You have Kopitar and Doughty on that team. You got two guys that are like 75 years old, and they're still freaking amazing, right?
Yep. And like you said, Florida is going to be in trouble with Tkachuk. And Barkov is another guy who's out till April, probably all the season. We'll see if he's even back for the playoffs. You know, that's – I don't know if they still have that rule in place. You know, remember when Tampa Bay had, what, Kucherov out for the whole year? And they were able to skirt luxury tax, salary cap things, and bring in some extra players. So I don't know if that's going to help Florida or not. But that's going to hurt the three-peat chances. And then we get to the Metropolitan, where, you know, it looks like it's Carolina, like you said, Devils will have a chance. So then we start with the Devils, because they have the chance, we think, to knock off Carolina.
Listen, there's a lot of things to love about the Devils. I mean, let's see, if they stay healthy. The whole thing about the Devils is health, and Markstrom's already hurt, right? Yep. So that, which hurts him for a couple of weeks. But Jack Hughes, Meyer, Mercer, Brad, Hischier, Palat, I mean, they have a great forward line. They are fast. They can score. Defensively, Luke Hughes gets the big contract. Dougie Hamilton's great. Pesci's great. Siegenthaler. They can go six deep. Defensively, they're solid there, too. It's going to be how good Markstrom is. If he's able to hold up in net, he's got to be the guy. But the Devils have the capability of beating anybody, and it's just going to be about health. I mean, last year they lost Jack Hughes, and that was pretty much it after a great start, Kev.
Yeah, Jack, his health is the key to the whole season. Hughes has to play 80 games this year and be healthy going into the playoffs. If he is, then the Devils have as good a chance as anybody in the postseason. Just question, you know, when does a trade for Quinn Hughes happen?
Well, you'd like to see it, right? If we had all three Hughes brothers playing like the Snasties did back in the day when we'd watch Quebec highlights during the Adams division, quarterfinals. But,
yep.
You know, it'd be nice to see the Stastny brothers and the Hughes brothers. Kev, why don't you talk a little about the Isles?
Yeah, the Islanders, I mean, the big thing this year is the number one pick, Matthew Schaefer, 18 years old. He's already among the top four defensemen. You know, the difference this year, you know, they've got a healthy Barzal. Let's see if that helps them out a little bit. They've made some changes on the fourth line. You know, no more Clutterbuck, no more Martin. But it's really the same team that's finished last season is back this year. And we know they finished with 82 points. I don't know if they're going to be that much better. I mean, there may be a couple of points, but unless something changes here, I just don't see this being a playoff team yet.
New general manager, Kev. Maybe at the deadline, we see some of the moves that you've talked about and we've talked about the last couple of years, which is some of these veterans need to go to inject some youth. If you know you're not going to be good. So maybe that happens now that Lamoriello's not here.
That's what I'm hoping because, you know, the Palmieri's, the Pagiots, Andrews Lee. I mean, these are guys that should have some trade value at the trade deadline.
I mean, listen.
And they got to make the moves this year because, you know, like I said, you can't keep bringing back the same core that's been slowly going downhill since 2020 and 2021.
The thing is you have the tools to do. You have the world-class goaltender if he ups his game a little bit from last year again. And you have the young defenseman, but you have a bunch of really solid guys on the blue line. And you just need to get a couple of snipers in here that can put the puck in the back of the net. That's really what it comes down for.
That should have been done in the offseason.
But it wasn't. So here it wasn't. Schaefer, you know, he's got a goal. He played like 26 minutes the other day. I mean, he's out there skating.
All right, and the last one amongst the locals is the Rangers. Darren?
So the Rangers are off to this gripping start, but the fact is that, you know, they got Sullivan behind the bench, which is a big difference maker for them, I think. I think it improves the team. JT Miller is the captain in his first full season. Again, they have a stud between the pipes and Igor. Gavrikov comes in to boost the defense. Thing, I don't love the defensive depth on this team. I think the front pair with Gavrikov and Fox is real good. I don't love the next two pairings very much. But what this team needs is Panarin and Zibanejad and Trocheck and Lafreniere to all rebound and get back to their 23-24 levels. And so far, they haven't because they've been shut out three times already. So this team needs to get that going and put the puck in the net. Like I said about the Islanders, you got the world-class goalie. They have some speed. They have the coach. They have some skill up front. They don't have the defense like the Islanders do. The Islanders don't have the scoring potential that the Rangers do. So both of these teams, I think the Rangers should and could be a playoff team. It's just going to come down to if these guys rebound a little bit. Panarin was still okay last year, but Zibanejad and Trocheck and Lafreniere were not, and that's unacceptable for this team going forward. And the funny thing about the hockey playoffs last year in the East, guys, So we had no Rangers, and we had no Islanders, and we had no Flyers, and we had no Bruins, no even Red Wings, right? I mean, you know, you're sitting there, and, you know, the playoff teams were Florida and Tampa and Carolina and Washington and Ottawa and Toronto and Montreal. Maybe, okay, you get the one solid team. I mean, it's like, you know, none of the big cities, none of the exciting cities, no Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, it's like none of the exciting cities were represented. And I know it was great hockey. I'm not trying to insult Toronto. Not really even Toronto, but, you know, Florida and Tampa or Carolina, but they need to get these teams back in the playoffs, because that's what the difference is for people watching the sport and loving the sport. You need to get the big cities back involved. And I don't see Philly doing anything. Pittsburgh might be the worst team in hockey this year. You know, Boston could improve. It's just, you know, they need to get the Rangers back. They need to get the Islanders back. They need to get some sort of a presence there. And hopefully we get one or both of those teams to join the Devils this year, guys.
I think, you know, if you look at the Metropolitan, I think it's clearly Carolina, New Jersey 1-2 in some order. And there's a gap there. I think it comes down to Capitals and Rangers for that third spot for the guaranteed playoff bid. One, the other one's going to finish fourth and be in the battle with a couple of teams in the Atlantic for that wild card.
And don't sleep on Columbus. This team is getting better. And this could be the year that Columbus makes a little bit of a jump into the playoff picture.
I think they're still one more year away.
I like Sanderson. But I like a couple things that this team puts together. They're young. They can put the puck in the net. Were they just doing it for Johnny last year, or are they actually improving? We're going to find out.
Yep.
Odds to make the playoffs locally, by the way, Devils at -350, Rangers at -175, Islanders at +250. To win the Stanley Cup, Devils at +1,400. Rangers are +2,800. Islanders are +15,000. So just a couple of local odds give you right off the top.
And they'll just give you a lot of faith right now. 0-3 start.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you know, not what we're hoping for. But you know what? You never know. Things will turn quickly.
All right. Last up on the board, week 7, NFL. We have done well as a group. We are 28-23. Darren's still leading the way at 12-6 through the first 6 weeks. He has the T-box. Where are you going first?
Kevin, don't bring up the college pick stats.
Because Kevin's winning those.
Kevin, you were at 13-8 in college. Gino was at 13-8 in college. And Darren's at 7-14 in college. Is that better?
I'm doing great.
Because my NFL picks, I think I got about 4 wins this year.
I'm taking the Broncos over the Giants, and I don't want to, but I just think that Darnold's going to face something he hasn't faced before in this one. I know it's 7. It's a lot of points here. I'm going to take the Broncos to kind of win this one, kind of blow them out and get up on them early. I think Denver didn't play well last week either, and I think there's a lot for Peyton to beat them up about. Their offense hasn't been great, but I think the Giants struggle to score this week. I'll say 24-7 Denver, and they win this one pretty convincingly. Kev or G, whoever's next?
No, Kev, good.
All right, I'm going to go Sunday night. I know the Falcons are off a win. 49ers are still banged up, but I think 49ers at home on the Sunday night game are going to find a way to put something together here. It's only 2.5. I'll take the 49ers to cover.
All right, my first one is going to be Green Bay -6.5 against the Cardinals. No Kyler Murray, no James Conner. They're banged up. I know they got some good running this week, but I think the Packers shut them down. Give me Green Bay -6.5. Darren?
I'm going to take the Vikings at home getting 1.5 against the Eagles. I just think that they have the week off. I know that Philly had the mini bye. There's just a lot of dissension in Philly right now. Nobody seems to be very happy there. I think that Minnesota's run defense will be good, and I think Carson Wentz is going to come to play against his former team, and I think he's going to play well. I just have a hunch. I think the Vikings escape with a field goal win, 23-20, 2017, something like that.
Kev?
I'm going to take the Bears -4.5 against the Saints. Bears have won 3 in a row. They're home, and the Saints are just not a good team. And 4.5, I know that's always the line that oddsmakers have no idea what's going to happen in this game either. I think the Bears come out and win by a touchdown. Okay.
My second pick, Darren, I'm going head to head with you. I think the Eagles, I think they're pissed. They've lost two in a row. They come out strong. Minnesota coming off the bye week. Still no McCarthy. I think the Eagles put points on the board. I think this is like the Eagles by 14. Give me the Eagles minus the 2.5. Darren?
All right, my third one. I'm taking the Chargers laying 1.5 against the Colts. I think they find a way to win this one at home. I don't think they blow them out, but I think that Daniel Jones struggles on the road in this one. And I think that, you know, I think it's a competitive game. I just think the Chargers find a way. Harbaugh's not going to lose another one. Well, he didn't lose last week, but he felt like he lost the way they played against the Dolphins down the stretch. I think the Chargers win this one. I'll say that they win by 6. I'll say that they win this one 23-17.
Okay, Kev?
From a betting perspective, so much for me wants to just say Carolina minus 1.5 of the Jets. I can't do that, though. I can't do it with the Jets. I'm going to take the Patriots laying 6.5 at Tennessee. Fire the coach. There's a lot of uncertainty there down in Tennessee. They're not playing well. The Patriots are playing real well right now. May's on a hot streak. So let's see if that continues. Patriots win this one by 2 touchdowns.
That was going to be my third pick. I will pivot. Because I love the Patriots this week. I'm going to pivot to the Monday night game. I'm going to take the Seahawks at home minus the 3.5 against Houston.
I like that one too.
Darren's got me on Seattle this whole season. I think he's on with them. I think they are very controlled with Darnold at the helm. Give me the Seahawks minus the 3.5. Darren?
I think that's our three.
That is our three.
Yep. All right, you guys have anything else before we wrap this shindig up?
Nope.
On our marathon episode, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world that, for the first time in my life, I thought I could have done just as well as another NFL quarterback. Please follow the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. By all means, you know, share what you'll want to hear more of. Tell us what you want more of. But even if you don't like us, like us anyway. That's what I want you to do. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.